Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening from wherever you're listening to us today. This is Ed Pisani with Business and Social Interviews with it by Ed Pisani. Today I have a very special guest. Her name is Cheryl Mays, and she has a company called Rise and Shine. She does time management, organizational skills, communication skills, training expertise in a lot of different things. She's been in the past a vice president of a college, development director of a major foundation. I won't say any more because she has a lot to share today. Cheryl Hayes, how are you?
I am doing well, Ed. Thank you. And hello, everyone out there, whatever time zone you're in.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You never know when someone might be listening. Cheryl, tell us a little bit about your story.
Sure. I am, I've had a vast background in sales. That is my forte is in sales. And I've actually probably about the last 20 plus years, I've spent not only as the front line in sales, but have actually developed my skill sets and have been promoted through various levels of leadership to whereas I was the, as you stated earlier, the VP of admissions for a career training institution, and then the director of development for several national nonprofit organizations. And then somewhere within the last year, as you know, you get to this point in life where you have another chapter and you go, okay, what do I want to do with this next chapter in life? And I've had the opportunity to have some clarity where I can actually sit back and go, what is my life's purpose? As we're all searching for, you know, what that purpose is, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've had the opportunity to sit back and actually look at what makes me happy. What is it that I have, this gift that I have that I can share with others that are in a place where they need some encouragement, they need some techniques, they need tools to get them to that next level that they're trying to accomplish, what's going to up-level their performance in either their individual world or their business world. And so I started Rise and Shine CF in the hopes of fulfilling my passion and my goal of getting people to that next level. And so Rise and Shine is a training company. We work with small to medium-sized businesses. We work with leadership development. We work with employee engagement. We provide tools and techniques that you can use in sales to get you to that next level, depending on where you want to go within your company mm-hmm. or where you want to go within your own business.
Interesting.
And so this is how the company actually was formed, because I've had the opportunity to start several businesses myself in the past. Mm-hmm. And I know what that entrepreneurship spirit is.
Yeah, it's not easy for sure. Now, you had mentioned that you help people. Is there any specific target market you go for? Or is this for like men, women, adults, retirees, children? Do you have a niche audience in reference to like training? Because I know sometimes entrepreneurs, they are kids. And like, do you have any niches that you really like to target?
I do. Business owners, small business owners, medium-sized business owners. And it's funny that you talk about a niche, because when we look at business, we're always looking at who is my niche, who is my target audience. And when it comes to coaching, success coaching, your audience is so wide, mm-hmm. right? Because yep. of the techniques and skills that you can share can, you know, it can resonate with any individual. But if you were to ask me what is my niche, then I would say it would be that small to medium-sized business mm-hmm. where they do not have what's called an organizational development department. So they don't have this huge department that does nothing but training. Mm-hmm. And so when you're a small to medium-sized business, you just don't have the resources to have that 5 to 7 man department that specializes specifically in training. And so what you have is a business owner that's trying to wear multiple hats.
That's true. And a lot of business owners do that. I always say like the standing joke is a chief bottle washer. Like I am everything plus the guy that cleans the toilets at night.
Exactly. Exactly. So you can imagine if you have a team of individuals that you want to get to the next level, you want to increase your sales, you want to retain your customers, you want to retain your employees. That's a huge hat to wear because that's ongoing.
Yeah,
So if
it
you have
is.
the opportunity to outsource, and you know, in this day and time, we're always looking at the bottom line and we're looking at our budgets, and inevitably what happens is when things get tight or when things get a little difficult, the first thing we stop doing is developing our employees.
Yeah,
And
you've
that,
got to switch
you know,
gears.
that's
Yeah.
exactly, that's the first thing that we stop doing is developing your employees. But the employees are the bloodline of your business. You know, I read a survey the other day. I do a lot of research and looking at different techniques and trainings. And I'm also a certified Jack Canfield trainer who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul and the Success Principles.
Yeah,
But
a
the
very,
other
very good book.
day,
Go on, I'm sorry.
yes. And so I know the other day, I actually was looking at a Gallup poll and they did a study and they said in today's population of employees, 70% of employees are actively disengaged, which is huge. When you're looking at a business and you're surrounded by employees that are disengaged, which means they're there just to get a paycheck,
Yeah.
is that helping your business increase sales? Is that helping your business retain your customers? Is that helping your employees feel like they want to come to work in the morning? You know,
It's interesting that you bring that up because I would think as a entrepreneur, that must be mind-blowing to think that your hard-earned dollars that you could be literally putting in your own back pocket, you have someone that's totally disconnected and may not want to be there. I mean, I would think that's the most painful thing a new business owner could hear, because it's like, a business is like a newborn baby, and having an employee come in the door is like you're literally saying it's almost like a babysitter. Like, I'm allowing you to touch and hold and care for my newborn baby. And to hear that they're like, yeah, I'm just checking out while I'm sitting here, is kind of scary to think about.
It is. It is. And you know, and so that takes us back to what we were initially talking about, that entrepreneur that's wearing these multiple hats. So how do you do that? You know, how do you get out into the community to acquire customers while back at the shop, your employees are not engaged? So what I do is I call it the game changer, right? I come in and I work with employees on getting their mindsets back into the thing that they love. Because I believe when people search for a position, you search for what you love doing. And it isn't until, you know, those things have been expired that you now start looking at, okay, what can I do? You know, what's available? And so even in that though, there is a passion, you know, no matter what you do, no matter where you are, it needs to be perfect effort. You don't have to be perfect, but perfect effort. And when you have a company that invests in their employees and their employees see that the company cares about their development, they want you to get to the next level. They want you to grow your skill sets. They want you to grow, you know, to where you can become a leader in that company. That changes the entire paradigm. So now you have this employee that was not engaged to now they are engaged because they go, wait a second, they're actually helping me. And so that's how you build those loyal employees. You know, we've all worked in places where you've seen the revolving door, right?
Yes. Oh,
You
yeah.
know,
Oh, yeah.
this month it's this employee. The next time you call up, they're like, oh, he's no longer here. And now you're dealing with a whole new person.
Yeah. Ironically, I was in an office like that when I first started my one of my careers after college, and we had a garbage can of people's door names, and they just stuck them around the garbage can, and they're like. And it was like a middle manager. It wasn't even like an entry level person that was doing it. And he was like, yeah, we've turned people over like one a month here. And he's like, it was a small office. I mean, maybe they had 24 people. So, If they're turning one over a month, over the course of the year, they turn over half of their staff. Over the course of 2 years,
Exactly.
it's almost the whole staff, which is not very good for building customer loyalty, building a strong brand presence when you have people literally just walking out the door. Because your customers are going to say there's something fundamentally wrong here.
Exactly.
And it's not like someone like passed away, So I think you're doing something that is an extreme value, in my opinion, for a business owner, even like someone that maybe isn't an entrepreneur, but like a manager, a middle manager or upper middle manager, they're executive and they're like second generation, third generation in the business, and they may need to have this just so like the dream of the original entrepreneur gets fulfilled. So that's really cool. Now, I guess my question is, you had mentioned you were a Jack Canfield trainer. I remember Chicken Soup for the Soul and like how they got their books out there and the O.J. Simpson trial. They gave every juror a copy of the book. Is your style of marketing and sales similar to his, or how did he affect you in growing as a professional?
What I loved about what Jack Canfield does and what he continues to do is he lives what he trains. You have some trainers that say this is what you should do, and then they're doing the total opposite.
Yeah,
What Jack
that's true.
Canfield does is he does exactly what he says works. And I think for any trainer, and that's one of the pieces that resonates with me and I hold to my heart, because for any trainer, you want the trainer to not be hypocritical, to not state one technique or this is what works, and then you see them doing something totally different. What you just mentioned for Jack Canfield to get this book out, he does what is called the rule of five, which is something that we train on, and that's the rule of five. Five actions that you are going to do every day to get you to your goal. And so that was part of one of his rule of five, was to get that book into the hands of those jurors, because he knew that they were sequestered and they had no outside contact. But that was a part of it. The other part was he reached out to five marketing agencies a day. He reached out and sent his book to five editors. He reached out and did five interviews. He did five seminars with five people and that he sold the books to. So when you look at that and you see the success that he's had, and what's so funny about it is that during my career, I've actually used success principles before they were given this name, right? Before they were
A
under this
buzzword.
category. Exactly. And so it resonated with me because I was looking at this, and as I'm going through the training, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this all along, which is why my career has succeeded. So if I take you back for a moment, when I was with the college, I started out as a frontline salesperson. I was out doing business to business. I was making phone calls, as we used to say, smiling and dialing. I was out in the, I was out on the streets, knocking on schools and doors and administrators' offices. And in that process, over the 2 weeks, I was nominated best in the company. So for 2 years in a row, I was nominated best in the company, at which time I was then promoted to a regional director, where I had a territory of five locations in Atlanta. Worked with those individuals there, got them to that next level because, again, coaching and feedback and training and, just being there and being accessible and developing them as not only individuals, but as leaders. Then I was promoted to the VP of admissions. So there's that succession that you go through when you find that you're using principles and you're using habits that are successful and you're deleting those habits that are not successful and, throwing away all of that bad stuff that's not going to get you to move forward. And that's what the success principles does for me. That's what I train folks on when I talk to them about success principles, and take you back to what you were talking about, Jack Canfield. Mm-hmm. He does exactly what he says that he trains on. And so it's easy to, you know, it's easy to believe and to follow someone's vision. It's like being a leader, right? If you have a leader that has a vision and they've communicated the vision to you succinctly to where you know exactly what the direction is, then you're on board. Mm-hmm. It's when it gets murky, you know, and you don't know where the company is going because there's no transparency, there's no communication. That's when people start rowing in opposite directions and nobody's in the boat rowing in the same way.
I see. That's interesting that you bring up leadership, because I know for a lot of entrepreneurs, there's all different styles and types, and having a good leadership role model to pull from, like this trainer, Jack Canfield, is critical. Do you do leadership workshops and seminars with business owners and new business owners, or do you have presentations for that?
I do. I have presentations for leadership development. I have presentations on organizational culture, mm-hmm. which is another huge, huge piece that I believe is just essential to have a culture so that your employees have a guideline so that they can follow that true north.
Okay.
I also do presentations on delegation and accountability. And I do presentations on a value-based leadership, as well as several other presentations, but those would be the main focus. It's leadership, it's culture, it's individual training, and it's communications, right? How do we have those courageous conversations, especially if you're in the workplace and you're a leader?
Yeah.
How do you have a conversation with an individual that's not performing? And it's not always that they're not connected or they don't want to do the job. There's something else. Mm-hmm. You know, there is something else that's moving them. And so how do we have those types of conversations? And typically when we go to school, they train us on a lot of things, but what they don't train us on is how to have conflict resolutions, how to have conversations where you disagree, but you're still able to come with a united ending to where you both agree that, okay, this is the direction that we're going to go in, and we're going to help you get there by X, Y, and Z. And that's where that coaching comes in, which is so important for a leader. You know, I've found that sometimes managers and leaders are placed into those positions without being fully trained on how to lead a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just numbers, because I say behind every number, there's a pulse. And that pulse is that person that's driving your numbers. Mm-hmm. So if you as a leader are disconnected to those teammates, to your individuals, then how can you change your numbers? You know, you can't lead by fear. It has to be an inviting leading, to whereas people are following you because they trust you, mm-hmm. they believe in your vision, and they want to get you to the next level because they know you're going to get them to the next level. So that's that, you know, reciprocity.
I guess that brings up a question, because entrepreneurs, not all of them are like that strong leader personality style. They have an amazing idea that can make millions of dollars potentially, but they don't have that. So what's your recommendation to someone that is kind of like the visionary, but not the, like, they're an introvert and they're not that strong leader, cheerleader type? What's your thoughts on that?
So there's two. One is to get yourself a coach, mm-hmm. a business coach, someone that can work with you on those things that need to be strengthened on.
Okay.
Because again, that takes us back to, right, everybody is not a, you know, leaders are not, you know, there's that question, right? Are leaders innate, or are they, you know, are they taught mm-hmm. how to be leaders? Are you born to be a leader, or do you learn how to be a leader? And I think it's a little of both, because you have to have that spirit in you that says, I have something that I can give to others, because leaders can't be selfish leaders. They have to be giving leaders, because that's how you get people to follow you. The other piece to that is, if you don't have a coach, then you need to have someone on your team. You need to surround yourself with those other people, right? Those are the people that can talk to your team. Those are the people that drive the employee side, that human side, that human
Gotcha.
capital.
Yeah.
Right? That human capital, you need to have that person if it's not in you. But I believe with proper coaching and with a leader that is open to coaching, a leader that's willing to make some changes in their individual techniques, some changes in some of their habits, that they too can be that person that has the vision and can drive the team. So that
Gotcha.
would be my two answers. You either need to have a business coach, or you need to have some people on your team that can fulfill that void.
And I'm guessing if they reached out to you and said, you know what, this woman knows what she's talking about, I'm gonna reach out to her, you pretty much can help them with either option that you guys decide upon is the best direction for that company. Because there is like the founders of a business, and then there's the next generation that come after it. You do you give them consulting and coaching to point them in the right direction?
Yes, and that's the business strategy portion of what my company does. Is initially we'll sit down with you and you tell us, where are you trying to go? Right? What are your goals? What is it that you want to accomplish over the next year, over the next 2 years? And where do you see your largest problem that's preventing you from getting to that point? So I had a company that it's funny we're having this conversation. So they're a recruiting company. And he said, Cheryl, we've been recruiting, we've done very well, but now we've plateaued. And they're $35 million. And he said, we've literally hit a plateau. And so they were bringing on a new department, a sales and marketing department, which is something they had not had before. And so they wanted someone to train them on sales. Now, the hardest part with sales is that, right, we all hate to hear the word no, because it's that
Rejection.
personal rejection, right? And so once you help a person get through how to reject rejection, and you couple that with techniques, and you couple that with, their confidence level, then it's a lot easier for them to get on the phone and make cold calls, which is something all salespeople hate doing. Is making cold calls. You're talking to this person that hasn't seen you. They're that gatekeeper that's protecting the fort, right? How do you get to that person that can make a decision by getting beyond this person? And so we went through and set up a training calendar on how to do that. But for them, what was most important was getting their people to have conversations, because a lot of people want to write a script. Right? This is what you say when this person says this. When they say this, then you go to this side and you say this.
Yeah, it's
And we
almost like a
went be
rebuttal, like turn to page two if they say no because of that.
Exactly. Exactly. And what we did was we went a totally different route. We taught them how to have conversations, how to listen and ask questions, which is something a lot of people don't, a lot of salespeople, they don't listen and ask questions because they already have in their mind what they want to have said, what they want to say next.
Yeah, they're like
And
force
so,
feeding you like, okay, say yes or I'm moving on to my next potential prospect.
exactly, right? Yes. And so when you find out that you're able to have a conversation, then you find that you can solve so many issues that might not have been that surface issue. It's like peeling back the onion, right? Let's find out why you're looking at companies, but you haven't found one yet. And why can why what would allow us to be that chosen company? And in order to do that, you can't read a script and just go through a bunch of solicited, listen for solicited responses that get you to that next page, two and three. But what you have is an opportunity to probe. And by asking specific questions, it allows that individual to really share with you what they're looking for. So now you have a meeting of the minds. And once you have the meeting of the minds, now they trust you, you know, because you didn't just try to sell them something, but you wanted to find out what is it that you're looking for? You know, what is your largest problem? And then you can find out how you can be the solution to that. I think a lot of times in sales, instead of finding out the need, mm-hmm. we want to tell them what their need is based on everybody else's need.
So pretty much they're selling the pain almost of like, we know your computer is old, or we know your car has a car issue, so just buy a new car.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's just old. It's just old. It's just a clunker junker.
Exactly, right? You just need a new car. Everybody in your situation needs a new car when it gets like this, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I have a question, or like I have a thought, and I just want to put that out there. Like elevator speeches. I'm not a fan of an elevator speech at all because of the lack of value proposition it offers a listener. It's what you mentioned before of like asking leading questions and informative questions to have something that brings value to the person you're talking to, beyond just saying your name and like what company you're with, but that the little extra really to make a connection and have a longer term relationship with them versus like, okay, this is what I do. I sell widgets. Either you want to buy one or you don't want to buy one. I'm moving on to my next potential person that might want to buy this widget. How's your opinion about like the elevator speech mentality in the sales world? Because you, obviously you're a very accomplished salesperson.
Yeah. So the elevator speech, I think people have gotten to the point where it's become robotic. Mm-hmm. So typically people say, okay, and this is the premise of it, right? You're riding in an elevator, you go from floor one to floor three. Yep. You've got this person in there, you got 60 seconds to sell what you're going to sell. My take on an elevator speech is, and I want to move away from that whole term, that coined term of elevator speech.
Okay.
And you know, let's have a opening conversation. So let's just say you're in the elevator and I'm in the elevator with you, Ed, and we're looking at each other in that awkward 2 seconds of, okay, what do I say to this person? And, you know, it's having just a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, if we move away from trying to figure out what this person is thinking and how can I get them to, you know, want to speak to me more, just engage. You know, I think we're so busy trying to play a role mm-hmm. that it takes out that human capacity. And so when I meet individuals, you know what I say is, how was your weekend? You know, today is a fabulous day. How's your day going? Mm-hmm. Then you start to have a conversation because now you get more than 60 seconds.
This is true. This is true. It's more relationship based. And I 100% agree with you. 100%.
Yeah. You know, and then what happens is in that conversation, you're going to find something that's common between the two of you. Now you've got a connection. Now you've got a connection. Now you can say, hey, you know what? I read something the other day. Now you're giving somebody something. You're gifting something. And again, we're still talking about riding in that elevator, right? You ever talk to someone in an elevator and you're in such of a great conversation, either you miss your floor or, you know, they're holding the elevator door because they don't want to finish the conversation. And it's like, okay, we need to get together again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because for me, that's what you want.
Yeah.
You want another 5 minutes. How do I get another 5 minutes where it's beyond 60 seconds?
That's right.
When we start talking to people as people, that's what gets you the extra 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's not just saying I sell this service or this product, take it or leave it, have a great day.
Exactly.
Yeah. So when it comes to organizational behavior, I'm guessing you have a lot of different type of presentations, one for like the new hire, one for the new hiring manager, mm-hmm. one possibly mm-hmm. for like the veteran manager that may need to get people on board with the, I hate to say it, with the fruit punch of the company.
Mm-hmm.
What by far is the one that you've seen over the course of time that business owners and entrepreneurs keep on coming back to you and saying, "Hey, Cheryl, I want you to come talk to my people about this."
How to keep them motivated. How to keep them motivated to whereas they are looking at the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people get distracted because managers are moving a thousand miles a minute, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And so if you're not doing that temperature check, you're not checking with your people to find out, okay, are they still on task? Because what happens is when you look at the number, that's the end game. That's the end. Everything is done. By the time you get that report, everything is done. So it's what happens before you get that report. That's where the important pieces are, because that changes what your report looks like. And it takes me back again to what I said. There's a pulse behind that number.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the managers start only looking at the numbers and forgetting who derived that number, where did that number come from? Who impacted this number? When you stop looking at those things, that's what I continue to hear about, is that, you know, my team is just, you know, they were doing great last month. Now they've just stopped, you know, and so what are you doing to engage with them? Do you do one-on-ones, you know, which is so critically important? Are you getting feedback as to, you know, and more importantly, are they buying into what the goal is? Did you ask them as a department, can we make this happen? Because when people have buy-in, then they're more dedicated. But when you just specifically give them something, our target is 200 phone calls a day, or our target is another, you know, another $10,000 at the end of the month. Well, did you ask them, okay, if we were to look at the end of the month, this is what we did last month, how can we get to another $10,000? Because now you're going to hear from them and they're going to buy into the plan, and you come up with this plan together, and then you hold them accountable.
That's
which is far better than giving them a number and holding them accountable to something you came up with.
Yeah. I had a boss that was very successful, and he always had a very simple statement at the beginning of the year. He said, "Do you know why we're doing this?" And everyone would sit there quietly. And he was an introvert. He did not say a lot, but when he said something, everyone listened. He said, "We're doing this because this pays your salaries." And it was very much like, this function we're doing right now pays you. And it kind of derived the fact of, like, by saying that, it's like, I find you to be very valuable, very useful. And we're getting angry because we want to pay you every penny you're worth. And he said it in so few words. He didn't even say that much, but I mean, the mm-hmm. message was received. I digress a little bit, but I mean, you're bringing up such valuable insights that I felt like sharing that quick story was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, you know, here's the other thing to that, what you just said. Everybody is not motivated by money. Everybody is not motivated by money. You know, some people, you know, their motivation is intrinsic. You know, it's actually, gosh, we're going to take everybody to lunch. If we hit our goal, mm-hmm. we're going to take everybody to lunch. So you guys are going to choose where you want to go, you know, and we're going to have a great time, and we're going to give away some little, you know, some awards there, you know. So again, it's having the conversations with your people, finding out what motivates them, because what motivates you, Ed, might not motivate me. You might be motivated by the lunch, whereas I'm motivated by money, or vice versa.
That's right.
You know, but it's having that conversation. I used to have a form that was developed by a teammate of mine, and it was called How I Like to Be Coached. And so when you started as an employee, after we went through the entire onboarding, which is another piece that I do also for companies, is onboarding, because I think that's a missing F a lot of companies have too.
Mm-hmm.
But the piece was How I Like to Be Coached. And it was a form that you would fill out that would share with us, what is it that gets you to, at the end of the day, when you're in your car, you're whistling and you're singing and you're going, I did a great job today, and I want to come back tomorrow. What is it that gets you to do that?
Gotcha. So you had mentioned onboarding. That seems like a very interesting piece of jargon, but in my mind as a business owner, I could take that in two or three ways. Could you define that for me?
Yeah. So your new hire, what are they given? Are they given not only the insight to where the company is going, because that's where you make it, that's where they make their decision, right? You've already hired them, so they've made a decision to work for you, but now are they going to stay? Because typically what happens is after 3 or 4 months, they kind of go, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was, and so I'm out. And so this 30, 60, 90 days, that is the most important part of their employment, because that's going to determine whether or not they, you know, as we use the term fight or flight, that's going to determine whether or not they are going to decide, you know what, I'm just here until I find something else, or you know what, this company invested in me. Not just that this company has shared, you know, all of these, you know, standard operating procedures of this is how you do this and this is how you do that, but there's an investment in its people. They like their employees. And that's the part that's, you know, that's really, really important. And a lot of this might seem like, you know, it's more mental than actual tactical. But I believe that you have to get the mental in the right place in order for the tactical to happen effectively and efficiently.
Gotcha. That brings up a question because as an entrepreneur myself, which I'm very proud of being, I've been one for about 10 years now. I know it. There's always that mindset of like, this business is never going to be in the next 5 years the size of like IBM. And I'm okay with that because I want as an entrepreneur, not myself personally, but the mindset of an entrepreneur to have a small business. And what do you say to like those entrepreneurs that are happy with the size business that they want and they're dealing with someone that they know is a stepping stone opportunity? They're never going to be Bill Gates per se. But what is your conversation with someone like that?
With the business owner or with the employee?
The business owner, the business owner.
Okay, what I tell small business owners is think like a corporation. Treat yourself like you are the IBMs and you are the Amazons. Treat yourself like that because if you continue to think small, then you continue to do small things. But if you think big, then you have the ability to remain, right? That small, intimate, and I don't want to use the word small. You have an opportunity to remain that company that you want to be, where you literally know all of your employees because you have 15 of them. You can continue to be that play, you can continue to be that business style, but you also have to think in doing what you're doing, making the best decisions that's going to allow you to remain the expert in that particular frame, in that particular industry, so that people can say, you know what, I can go over here to this big box store, or I can go over here where I know the owner, where he comes and he knows my birthday, he knows that my kids played soccer, you know, or I can go to this place where they have no idea who I am, they're just looking for my membership card, you know. So there's those different areas of how you can remain in the frame that you're in, but yet still have that idea where you're not stifled, or you know, you're not continuing to think of yourself as a small business. I'm a small business, but I never really call myself a small business
Why is
because
that?
I don't want that. I don't because I believe what you say is what you believe. And so if I continue to call myself a small business, then I will make small business decisions. I'll make small business moves. And so I call myself a business because what I want to do is I want to think just like the Amazons and the IBMs. I want to make those types of decisions even though I am still a, you know, 3-4 person shop. Mm-hmm. Because right now, you know, I am a business that, you know, has 2 to 3 people. One is part time. And so, but with that, you still have that ability to, you know, to have a place where your employees are just happy to come to.
Nice.
And I'll tell you, I've met employees that have been with their company for 20 plus years. And they've said, Cheryl, there's only 3 of us. I was there when the owner started the company. You know, I'm there now. My kids have gone through school. You know, my kids come in on, you know, it doesn't even have to be bring your kid to work day, but they are welcome to come in, you know, and sit with me during the break, a holiday or something. And we'll have them on the copy machine making copies, you know, so it's a family business. And that, with your extended family.
Yeah, that brings up a question, because I was actually thinking about that a moment ago. I want to ask you, do you have experience with family businesses? Because from what I've seen, a lot of family businesses are very difficult organizationally, because there's a different dynamic there of, like, sometimes you have to have tough love. And it's hard to be like, okay, I raised this child from when they were in diapers, but now I got to be like, look, you're messing up, and you're no longer a child, so I can't yell and scream at you. Unlike what you see in that, like, motorcycle show where, like, the father and son are literally throwing around motorcycle parts. And so do you have experience with that? And, like, is that, like, a presentation that you offer?
You know, so here's what's so funny about that is I came from that.
Really?
Yes. My mom, when she retired, she purchased a nightclub, and it was myself, her, and my 2 brothers. And so we were the managers. We were the, you know, she was the head of the family. Mm-hmm. And I was the manager. My other brother was a manager, and my other brother, was kind of out of it. You know, he wasn't on the actual, role as being a manager of working with the organization at all. And so what was so strange was you had to get to the point where I literally had to stop calling my mother mom, right? Because I'm telling other people, you know, what to do. And it's like, hey, mom. And it's like, okay, you know, so you literally have to correct yourself so that you're seen as not just, okay, you're in this position because your mother owns the position, you know, because your mother owns the company. But, you're in this position because you are good at what you do. I took marketing and business in school. And so for me, it was an opportunity to work with a family business. I love family businesses. I think there's that dedication, there's that devotion. But just to what you said also, right, there's that, okay, you know, now we have to have this particular conversation where we have to close the door.
Yeah. Okay. And that's not easy to do. Like, I mean, like, I can imagine there's probably a lot of families where it might be the daughter that's in charge or the son that's in charge, and the mother or the father or the grandmother is an employee, or vice versa. Like, it is the parent that's now in charge of it, but they've been working in a corporate job their whole life, and they have this millennial that's coming in the door that has no experience whatsoever. So it's kind of cool that you have that experience you can bring to the table and help people.
And you know, and that goes along too with the presentation I referenced earlier, is how to have those courageous conversations.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where that falls under. You know, how do you have that conversation with your mother, or, you know, with your child that you want to see get ahead, but, you know, they're not listening to you, or they're hearing you, but then they're telling the staff something else. You know, there's those types of things that happen when you have a family that is actually working together. And I'll tell you, being able to communicate, and again, being able to be in the same mindset, so that, again, you're rowing the boat in the same direction. You know, the rules are the rules. It applies to a business where there is, you know, no family connection, mm-hmm. or it applies to a business where there is a family connection, which takes me back again to saying that even though there's a family business, you have to treat it like a corporation.
Gotcha. And it makes good sense. And you bring up a lot of strong value. Now, You also do project management and event management. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. So my history with nonprofit organizations as the director of development, I was a fundraiser.
Okay.
And in fundraising, you were in charge of all of the events. So the galas, the auctions, all of that. And I haven't had a lot of time to do that because I've been focusing on the other part of the business on just the training and the employee development portion. But for that, it's a mindset that has gotten me again to where I am because you have to be organized. There's got to be time management. There has to be the ability to communicate so that people know what you're doing even when you're not there. And so those pieces are, again, things that I have brought with me from my past careers, which again falls under those success principles. Just making sure that you have the ability to, show someone what your vision is. Because I'll tell you, whenever you're planning an event of some sort or whenever you're doing project management, there are so many moving pieces.
Yes, there is.
And you cannot be, right? You cannot be at every place. You can't, especially if they're off-site, you can't be everywhere. So your team has to be able to carry out the vision, which means, again, it takes us back to that transparency, to that communication, to the expectations, and then holding people accountable.
Gotcha. It's interesting because I did fundraising for 8 to 10 years of my life, and it is a, there's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that are happening. And one of the things I gained out of it was two simple words: fearless honesty. Because I even use that today in my own business, where I just tell it as it is, and I tell people like, "Look, I'm going to be totally honest with you. It's probably not going to help me with my bottom line because I'm going to give you an option which I think is far superior than the service that I can give to you. And I want to do that because I don't want you to come back and say, hey, I found this out later on, and man, am I disappointed. That I don't trust you anymore because you didn't lie to me, but you didn't really totally tell me everything from every different angle."
Exactly. And that's the worst thing that could happen to a leader because once you lose that trust, then everything you do from that point moving forward is either going to be questioned or it's just going to be dismissed because there is that lack of trust. And, I agree wholeheartedly with you. It's that fearless honesty, like, look, this is where we're going, this is what we're expecting to happen. But the chances are it might not happen that particular way. But we're gonna do what we can do, right? It's like we're gonna ride this horse out. And you find that, people are still, they're gonna be right there with you. Because what people want is not what I think, it's what I know from talking to employees. And they've said, sure, look, this is what we want. We want to know what's going on. Typically, they're the last people to know. Decisions are being made, and then when they get the information, the decision has already, written in stone. They had no input. There was no, do you guys have any other ideas how to make this more efficient? Because you're doing it every single day, and we did it 10 years ago, but now we're in the ivory tower, and we don't really, you're four people separated. And so what they want is that honesty, they want that communication, and they want to be able to say, okay, I'm in. It's kind of like having a forced fun day, right? When your parents tell you, look, we're going here, we're going to the beach, and you're like, well, I don't want to go to the beach. Yeah, you do.
But I had a I had an old boss that used to call it mandatory fun time.
Yeah, right.
We're gonna have
Yeah,
mandatory fun time
exactly.
now, so put on your happy face because we're gonna do this.
Right. And then you go there begrudgingly, and nobody's having a good time because, it's like we didn't want to do this. They didn't ask us if this is what we wanted to do. So it's just that. The other piece that my business focuses on, Ed, is I'm also a keynote speaker. And
Oh,
so I've
really?
had the opportunity to speak on empowerment. And so that's the premise of where everything that I do comes from, is empowering people. And I just today had an opportunity to speak with the individuals over at Seminole State College of Florida. That's nice. Their new name now, the really long name. And we're going to do a dinner with their students on business etiquette.
Nice.
Because when you think about students coming out of college, what they don't get is, how do you network? How do you go up and talk to people in a room where, you know, you're not just standing there waiting on somebody to come and speak to you? How do you go up and talk to people? How do you sit at a gala, right? And how do you eat? What do you, what, you know, what are all these utensils in front of me? How do I use them? Which is kind of, you know, which is so disheartening for a person coming out of college to have that as a deficiency, you know, to not be able to network properly or effectively, and to feel as though you're not sure about what to do. And so you're sweating bullets while you're sitting here at these dinners, or even at a luncheon when you're going to meet someone one on one and you're at a lunch. You know, how do you sit through this? What do you talk about? How do you, you know? And so this is an opportunity for me to share with those students business etiquette. And I think that is so critical for our generation that's coming out into the workforce on how to represent themselves.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's ironic. I had a job application opportunity online myself, and the person that replied, because it was via social media, actually had a very negative picture on his page, to the point where I was like, I'm not even going to consider the opportunity, because if he's willing to do something so flagrant online this way, how is he going to represent me and my business when I'm not around? Going back to that whole infant baby, like, it's so important. And you know, I want to do something fun, because we have about like 9 or 10 minutes left. I want to ask you a question in a different way, because everyone sort of says, oh, give me the top five things that you would say that would help motivate people. I want to ask you the opposite. Can you give me the top five things that would 100% demotivate people? And the reason why I'm asking this question is, I sometimes run into business owners, because I run an ad agency, that say like, oh, I say it like this because that's fine. you're a professional. You know what to say and what not to say. So what are the top five things you should never say to your employee?
Oh my gosh. Okay, top five. Let's see. I would say one of, and I'm just, as you were saying, I was like, okay, let me write something down really quick. I think one would fall under the category of fear. Okay.
Okay.
And so that would be kind of like, and I want to phrase this properly. Either do it or get out. Something along those lines.
Oh,
right?
I love that one. Do it or get out. That's great.
Yeah. Basically, you know, either you do what I say or you can find the front door.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
I think that's number one. The other thing that you could say is, you know, I don't have time for this.
I don't have time for this. Yeah, that's another good one. That's a very toxic in nature.
Yeah. The other thing you can say is, I didn't make the decision.
Oh yeah, the lack of ownership. That's good too. You're very good at this. I can tell you're an expert, because you're trying to spin it around and like, what? What should someone never say? And these are great.
Okay, so that's three.
Yeah.
The other one I think is, you know, leave it at home. You know, oftentimes we tell people, you know, when you cross over the threshold, everything that everything that's going on at home, leave it at home. And that's the incorrect way of having that conversation, because again, right, we're looking at who affects your business, and that's the pulse, and that's the human capital. So I would say leave it at home. And then the last one would be, You're not qualified for that position.
Ooh. that's brutal. That's just crushing, soul crushing to someone.
Exactly, because if this is what you're saying as a leader, what they don't realize is that that falls back on you as a leader, because if I'm under you should help me get qualified for that position.
Yeah, or
Right?
you
Leaders
never
should
want
breed
me
leaders.
to, yeah, you never want me to be successful in my life, so why should I care about your success?
Exactly. And so what you're telling me basically is I've hit the ceiling. Then I should just walk out on my own is basically, what your other option would be, because that would be my option, is you're telling me that, I'm never going to be qualified for that position. Have you done anything to help me? So those would be my top five.
Nice. That's a very good top five list for then things you should never say. For someone that's listening to this later on, you don't want to say that. And I think hearing it from a veteran professional is very useful because it's something that a lot of people make the assumption like, well, I'm in charge. This is my ship. So you're either on board or you're not here anymore. And they take that mentality to heart where they start saying stuff that's not even in jest. It's just mean.
Exactly.
It's one thing if you're saying it in jest, but then you gotta be careful of like lawsuits of like
Exactly, right?
did wait, do
And
they understand I'm joking?
you can't run the entire department. You can't do the machine. You can't go over here and make the coffee. You can't go over here and, make this appointment. You can't do all of that by yourself. So if you alienate your team, and once you get one employee that is unhappy, then the toxicity,
Yeah,
right? You
you're
have that
right.
toxicity that spreads.
Yeah.
And so then you got to make some really tough decisions.
Yeah. And that's really no fun because I mean you're putting more time into now running the business, getting the hiring going. And it's not like saying, oh, I'm adding a position on. It's kind of like, no, I'm replacing people that are actually working and functioning to get things accomplished, and now I have to get what they accomplish, and that could be tiring because if that business owner does that for too long, it's going to affect their home life because they're not going to be home.
There you go.
They're always going to be on. They're always going to be working, and I hear that a lot. Like, just turn off your phone. Like, we're on vacation. It's like, well, I can't. Because like I'm in charge of sales, I'm in charge of customer service, I'm in charge of this, I'm in charge of that. I'm in charge of all of it. And you got to sort of say, okay, when are you gonna not be in charge of all of it? And what things are you willing to let go and say, you know what, there might be someone better than me to do this.
That's the delegation and accountability. That's another workshop that I do. Yes, absolutely. And then the other question that I ask business owners is, can you walk away for 30 days? If you're running a business and you can't walk away to go on vacation, then there's something wrong.
Yeah, that goes
Right? If
almost
you
into an
can't.
Anthony Robbins like motivational speech of like, are you a business owner or are you an employee of the business?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you can't walk away and not just walk away, but if you can't walk away and shut off, right? If you can't power down, then again, are you truly a business owner, and have you looked at your staff to see if you've put the right people in place? Because a lot of times people are afraid to delegate. They're afraid to delegate. They're afraid to give someone else the opportunity because it's going to, it makes them think, oh my gosh, if I give this to them, then that means, I'm going to have to do less. And if I do less, so there's the whole processing of the benefits of delegating and then the mentalness of delegating and not feeling like you're not capable or you're less than because you allowed. And I don't say you gave off, I say you allowed someone else to be developed. Because I think leaders should continuously produce leaders.
You're absolutely right, and like I mean, there's a lot to be said about saying you don't have to be the best at everything, but you can actually get someone that's better and smarter than you to be on the team to take care of your weakness and your deficiencies. Because I think as a business owner, it's very, very easy for someone to turn around and sort of say, I have to be the master of everything, which is an impossibility. The greatest masters of all time were not the masters of everything. They were master of one thing, and they put hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours to become the master of that one thing.
Exactly. And you know the old saying, right? If you're the smartest person in the room, then your room is way too small.
It's true. It's true. Well, Cheryl Mays, this has been an outstanding and wonderful interview. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you today. I hope all the listeners that tune into this radio show podcast enjoyed it as well. And I hope you have a fantastic weekend, because we're coming up to the weekend right now, and a fantastic week next week. And thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, and I just want to say, if anyone is interested in getting in touch with me, I have a website.
And what is your website?
It is www.rising-and-shining.com.
And what's your telephone number if someone wants to give you a phone call?
Sure, 407-205-2142.
Great.
And I'm also, I do a Facebook Live session on Mondays where I share a success tip.
Okay.
I'm also on LinkedIn and Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Cheryl Mays, thank you again for being on the show. And to the listeners that are out there, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you have a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. And until our next show, have a nice day.
Thank you so much, Ed. And to all of your listeners, have an amazing day.